From Feature Story News in Washington and our bureaus around the world, this is FSN Reports. I'm Kevin McAleese. On today's programme, an outrage of unspeakable proportions, President Obama's condemnation of the downing of a Malaysian airliner.
We know that these separatists have received a steady flow of support from Russia. This includes arms and training. It includes heavy weapons. And it includes anti-aircraft weapons.
We'll have the latest updates on that air disaster from our correspondents in Ukraine, Amsterdam and Moscow. And also today, Israel calls up another 18,000 military reservists to bolster the ongoing ground operation in Gaza.
The Israeli Prime Minister instructed the military to prepare for the possibility of a significantly wider ground invasion.
That's coming up on FSN Reports after our latest summary of the day's headlines.
From Feature Story News in Washington, I'm Simon Marks. US President Barack Obama says evidence indicates that the downing of Malaysia Airlines Flight 17 was caused by a surface-to-air missile launched from areas in Ukraine controlled by pro-Russian separatists. Speaking in the White House briefing room, Mr. Obama called for an immediate ceasefire in the region, and he warned Russia against interfering in the investigation. From FSN's Washington Bureau, Lorna Shaddock reports.
Mr. Obama began by saying that the deaths of 298 men, women, children and infants on Malaysian Airlines Flight 17 are an outrage of unspeakable proportions. And while being careful not, as he called it, to get ahead of the facts, the president made it clear that the plane was brought down with a missile fired from a rebel area.
What we have confidence in saying right now is that a surface-to-air missile was fired and that's what brought the jet down. We have confidence in saying that that shot was taken within a territory that is controlled by the Russian separatists.
He added that one U.S. citizen is known to have died and called for an international inquiry into the crash. President Obama also noted that Russia had provided arms and weapons training to rebels in control of eastern Ukraine and called on President Putin to work with the Ukrainian government and take what he called the diplomatic path towards resolving the crisis.
There were tragic scenes today at Schiphol Airport in Amsterdam, where the flight originated. Over half the victims were Dutch nationals. FSN's Sandra Gutman was there as relatives gathered.
They've been taken to a nearby hotel to try to keep them together, offer a consolation from staff members of Malaysian Airlines. We here are there to help them through these very difficult times.
Han ten Broek is a prominent Dutch parliamentarian. He spoke to FSN in The Hague.
It is a conflict area. So if the conflict had anything to do with the downing of this aircraft, then that needs to be found out.
And in Australia, fingers are being pointed at Russia, as the country mourns 28 of its citizens aboard the plane. At the United Nations Security Council, Australia's Deputy Permanent Representative, Philippa King.
There is mounting evidence that the crash was caused by a missile strike and was downed in territory not controlled by Ukrainian authorities, and mounting credible information that this was conducted by separatist militia groups acting with the assistance of others.
The Russian ambassador told the UN Security Council that Moscow is putting, in his words, all the blame for the disaster on the authorities in Kiev. In other news, Israel's ground offensive in Gaza continues. At least 27 Palestinians and one Israeli soldier have been killed since it began on Thursday. President Obama telephoned Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and said he's hopeful that the Israelis will minimize civilian casualties. From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN. More now on the conflict in Gaza. The Israeli ambassador to Britain, Daniel Taub, says his country's forces have taken out of action around 40% of Hamas rockets in Gaza. And he blamed the Palestinian militants for the civilian casualties already incurred.
Hamas doesn't use weapons to protect its civilians. It uses its civilians to protect its weapons. And in that situation, unfortunately, as careful as you can be, there is no way of ensuring that you can actually deal with this threat without a risk of civilian casualty.
Daoud Kutab is a Palestinian journalist based in Amman, Jordan. He says the ground invasion cannot achieve its goals.
We have to find a way out of this violence. This violence against the violence does not really produce any results. And we need some people with wisdom and some people with the moderation to try to find a solution that can reduce the underlying causes of this conflict.
The former Italian Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi has been acquitted of paying for sex with an underage prostitute. His conviction last year has now been overturned on appeal, as FSN's Elena Cassas reports from our bureau in Rome.
He was sentenced to 7 years in jail last year for paying dancer Karima Al-Maroug, better known as Ruby the Heart Stealer, for sex in 2010 when she was 17. Both parties have always denied they ever had sex, and the court said that was decisive. Berlusconi was also cleared of abusing his power to cover the case up by telling police Al-Maroug was the niece of Hosni Mubarak. He still faces another trial on charges of bribing a pimp to provide false testimony in a separate prostitution case.
Elena Cassas, she is now heading to eastern Ukraine. You'll hear her reporting from there next week, alongside the rest of the FSN team in Kiev, Moscow, Brussels, the United Nations, and of course here in Washington. That is the latest feature story news. Simon Marks reporting.
From Feature Story News in Washington, I'm Kevin McAleese. Welcome to FSN Reports. President Obama today condemned the downing of a Malaysian airliner as an outrage of unspeakable proportions.
This was a global tragedy. An Asian airliner was destroyed in European skies, filled with citizens from many countries. So there has to be a credible international investigation into what happened. The UN Security Council has endorsed this investigation, and we will hold all its members, including Russia, to their word.
Nearly 300 people were killed when the passenger plane crashed on Thursday in eastern Ukraine. At least one American was among those who perished. The president called for a credible international investigation into the crash, which US intelligence believe was caused by a surface-to-air missile. Ukraine has called the incident an act of terror and firmly laid the blame with pro-Russian separatists. European monitors have been attempting to gain complete access to the crash site, which is in rebel territory. Our correspondent Ira Spitzer is in the Ukrainian capital.
Well, the mood in Kiev is definitely an extremely somber one. You know, the news in the last 24 hours about the plane shot down, certainly on everyone's mind. And there are makeshift memorials around the city. There's a huge one at the Dutch embassy. Of course, the Dutch suffered the heaviest casualties in that plane. There are over 150 Dutch people aboard that plane. So at the embassy here, there's about 500 flowers, candles at any given time. There's about 100 mostly Ukrainians paying their respects to the people that, mm-hmm. that perished in that plane crash.
And what have the Ukrainian government been saying about that crash today?
Well, the Ukrainian government spoke up first and loudest, blaming the separatists and blaming Moscow directly for what happened. We saw they released several pieces of evidence. They released tapes that the separatist commanders purportedly discussing among themselves what happened after the crash. Also, discussing with sort of Russian agents, indicating further ties to Moscow than Moscow has come forward with so far. So they released those. They also released a video of the surface-to-air missile launcher being transported. I don't know if that was the exact one used for this to shoot this plane down, but one that they believe that the separatists are in possession of. So strongly, condemning the actions of and saying that Russia is responsible.
And lastly, Ira, there are investigators now at the scene of that crash?
Investigators from the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe have been allowed onto this crash site. And this crash site has been a source of extreme controversy throughout the day because it's in separatist-controlled territory. So they're the ones who were initially sifting through the wreckage. There were a couple black box recorders, and we've heard differing things about if those have been found, who's in possession of those. There's a big fear on the Ukrainian side of, and also on the international side, of some sort of evidence tampering. They don't want the separatists to send the black box to Moscow to look at or to sort of have their way with the crash site. So the news that the international investigators are there has definitely been well received here, although, albeit with some skepticism, everyone's sort of worried that what they think to be the truth, will somehow be covered up here. So it's a really fluid situation.
Ira Spitzer in Ukraine. Now, the US ambassador to the United Nations says Russia has a lot of explaining to do over the crash. During an emergency UN Security Council meeting on Friday, Samantha Power criticised Moscow's ongoing support for Russian separatists in eastern Ukraine. Tom Barton is our correspondent in Moscow.
Well, after an initial period where President Vladimir Putin expressed his condolences for the loss of life and for the families who'd lost loved ones, as far as Kiev was concerned, it was very much reverting to type for Russia. And Russia was giving as much accusation to Ukraine as Ukraine was to Russia. The both sides very quickly became very seriously opposed. Russia, the Ministry of Defense, led the charge, really sort of laying the blame at the Ukrainian military's door. Vladimir Putin initially saying that it was the situation created by what he termed the bellicosity of Ukraine and its armed forces that created the situation in which that plane could be shot down. But then it later morphed through the Russia's ambassador to the UN into really quite aggressive language, total blame laid at the door of Ukraine and its armed forces. And so we see really a very aggressive stance in terms of the rhetoric coming out of Moscow now.
Yes, that's right. That was the Russian ambassador to the UN speaking earlier at that emergency meeting at the headquarters in New York. And we also heard earlier from Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov, who also dismissed any claims of Russian involvement. But that hasn't stopped the international community looking towards the Kremlin for answers.
Absolutely. Russia, nearly impossible to disassociate it from this conflict in eastern Ukraine and from this crash as well, by extension. Sergei Lavrov very keen to stress that the black box, the flight recorder from that plane, at least one of them, perhaps both, is not in the hands of Russia. And that is precisely the opposite of what officials on the Ukrainian side say. They say that they have confirmed it is in the hands of Russia. So the two sides diametrically opposed over this black box. And it really a little microcosm of the difficulties of trying to find a reasonable investigation, a reasonable solution to the problems, when the two sides just seem to totally refuse to give any kind of leeway or negotiation.
Tom Barton in the Russian capital. Of the 298 people killed in the crash, the overwhelming majority were Dutch nationals. The country's prime minister expressed his deep shock and promised to have the Dutch victims' bodies repatriated as swiftly as possible. Our Europe correspondent Sandra Gatman spoke to prominent Dutch parliamentarian Han ten Broeke.
Let me first say that there's, as you say, many nationalities were on board, and my sympathy goes out to all the people and the loved ones that are left, and they want to know what happened, and we all want to know what happened. But especially for the Netherlands, this is a national tragedy. As it stands now, and what we know is that there is 189 people who lost their lives on board of that plane, the MH17, on its way to Kuala Lumpur.
What is it that the Dutch government is looking for in terms of the investigation going forward? And do you feel you have had enough reassurances from the Russian side to get all the information that you need?
Our Prime Minister, Mark Rutte, has contacted President Putin this afternoon, has made it very clear that we expect full, unfettered access to the crash site, that we need to have a full investigation, that the professionals that are already on their way, the teams that are on their way to do the investigation and carry it out, have all the access to people, to the debris, the black box. And that is what we need to have. And he got the assurance by the Russian president that that would happen. And it's important that the Russians do that, because they seem to have quite some influence in the region, which, as you know, is disputed. There is a big conflict. And it's important that the investigation teams can do their work without being tampered with, and also in safety.
Is it also true that it's quite necessary to get the Russians on board, because the area is quite a black hole, isn't it, in terms of radar reach?
Well, all the things that could contribute to the total picture of what happened here, there's a lot of speculation going around, and everybody has their own ideas. But I think especially it is a responsibility, certainly for the Dutch, to those who lost loved ones, that we find to the last fact what happened. In order to do that, we need to trace every possible piece of evidence that can be found. Now, obviously, radar pictures are very important. We don't know whether, for example, there's satellite pictures, maybe military satellite pictures. They should be declassified in that case. And there's a couple of countries that could provide that. And they need to be able and willing to fully cooperate. Obviously, this has been happening very close to the Russian border, 30 miles from the Russian border. So maybe their radar picked something up. There's no NATO radar that could have seen this. There were no AWACS in the area, not a big frigate with radar capacity. So yes, radar is probably very important, and therefore it's of the utmost essence that all the parties and all the nations involved, including the Russians, are fully cooperating.
You're trying to get the Russians on board with the investigation process, but of course there's huge international and Western pressure to get Moscow to answer questions as to whether the pro-Russian rebels did in fact carry out the gunning down of this plane. What is the balance then about in terms of trying to juggle getting them inclusive into the investigation, but also put pressure on them to answer tough questions?
Well, as I said, it's important that all the parties involved, and that certainly also involves the Russians, because they do have quite an influence in the area, as we all know, especially with the pro-Russian separatists. It is a conflict area, so if the conflict had anything to do with the downing of this aircraft, then that needs to be found out. And finger-pointing is... I can see why there's many people who want to do that, but if that jeopardizes the investigation, that in itself, of course, is not contributing to the outcome. And I think we owe it to those who lost loved ones to get the facts on the table before we judge.
Do you think it's perhaps an exaggeration to toughen the Western stance against Russia at the moment?
Russia in the East Ukraine conflict that we see needs to change their position. They need to accept that the borders are still the borders, that they cannot mingle in, and that in Kiev, in a democratic way, the leadership has changed. Now, it is difficult for them to accept that. But this afternoon I also saw something coming out of the Russian state news agency that I hadn't heard before, a change of tone perhaps from President Putin, basically hoping for President Poroshenko from Ukraine to come up with an acceptable proposal for a solution to the region. We haven't heard that before. Now, if all of this can contribute to a solution for the region, then at least something good would come out of it. But for that, obviously, we need to put pressure where pressure is needed to be applied.
Our Europe correspondent Sandra Gatzman with Dutch parliamentarian Hanten Broeke. Now, following the crash of flight MH17, questions are being asked about why commercial airliners were still being permitted to fly above eastern Ukraine, a known conflict zone. Separatist rebels and Ukrainian authorities have both accused each other of shooting down the plane with a missile. FSN's Natalie Powell spoke to aviation expert Chris Yates of Yates Consulting and started by asking why commercial passenger jets were allowed to fly over eastern Ukraine.
Those rules seem to be quite lax in so much as the International Civil Aviation Organization, ICAO, as it's known, had given a clean bill of health to the airspace above Ukraine, including in the eastern sector, the eastern conflict zone. So all civil aircraft were allowed to fly in that airspace, and many of them actually did.
Should we essentially see these guidelines being tightened in these areas, do you think?
I think there's no doubt that the guidelines do need to be tightened, and tightened considerably. At the end of the day, it's been known for a couple of weeks or possibly a bit longer that the Russian rebels, I suppose, were targeting military aircraft, and it doesn't take a great stretch of the imagination to realise that if they're targeting military aircraft, then possibly, just possibly, a civil aircraft might get into the crosshairs.
Now, one of the results of what's happened is that airlines are kind of rerouting their flights so that they're not crossing that Ukraine corridor. How is this going to affect global traffic?
Well, it's going to affect traffic somewhat, but not greatly, I would suspect. We're talking about an impact that will be reasonably minimal, I feel. 14 or so European jets operate in that particular part of the world, flying to and from Europe and Southeast Asia every day. And of those jets, most of them now, all of them in actual fact, have moved north. So they're circumventing the Ukraine in its entirety. That will put time on the flight, of course, in so much as it will probably take about an hour and a half extra to get to your destination. Might also, if this lasts a particularly long time, push up the cost of airfares as well, it might be said.
Interesting. So the airfares could possibly go up, but we're not likely to see sort of huge queues in airports.
We're not likely to see huge queues in airports, by no means. It's a small number of flights, but a key number of flights that operate between Europe and Southeast Asia. Because it is a relatively small number, then we're not going to see the queues building at our airports anytime soon.
But we do know that the separatists have discovered, have recovered, one of the black boxes. What is that likely to tell us, and do you think we'll ever get the information from it?
Well, provided that the separatists hand over that black box, or boxes, as the case may be, to the relevant authorities, then the chance of pulling data off it, or voice recordings, if it happens to be the voice recorder, are very high. And that black box will give us a good idea as to precisely what occurred on board the aircraft or to the aircraft. So, for example, the voice cockpit recorder not only records the conversations between air traffic control and ground, but it also records the ambient noise within the cockpit. So if it were a missile strike, it's likely that it would have picked up the impact of the missile, the explosion of the missile, before going dead. So that gives us a very good clue as to what happened.
And I know you've touched on this, Chris, but why were planes allowed to fly over what's clearly quite a dangerous area?
It is clearly quite a dangerous area. The International Civil Aviation Organization had approved the use of Ukrainian airspace, including that above the conflict zone, for use by civil aircraft. So therefore, civil aircraft were using it as the shortest point between point A and point B, point A being, in this instance, Amsterdam Schiphol, and point B being Kuala Lumpur International Airport. and, you know, it would have forever been the case had it not been for the tragic loss of MH17.
Natalie Powell talking to aviation expert Chris Yates. This is FSN Reports. Israel is calling up another 18,000 military reservists to bolster the ongoing ground operation in Gaza. Since the invasion began on Thursday, more than 24 Palestinians have been killed. Israel's military claims Hamas militants have fired dozens of rockets at Israel on Friday and that one Israeli soldier died in the fighting. President Obama said he spoke with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu about doing whatever is necessary to minimise civilian casualties. Over 270 Palestinians have died since the conflict broke out over a week ago. Kristen Chick is in Gaza City for the Christian Science Monitor.
Well, the ground operation began last night after several hours of very heavy shelling. And so far, the troops have stayed very close to the northern Gaza border. So at this point, they haven't gone further into Gaza. But today, the Israeli Prime Minister instructed the military to prepare for the possibility of a significantly wider ground invasion, which could mean that the conflict would last longer and claim many more lives.
And what form militarily has this incursion taken?
The military has come in with tanks, with individual soldiers on foot and with bulldozers, and they've been hunting for Hamas tunnels on the border.
What about the Palestinians in Gaza who are caught up in this? The advice from Israel is leave your homes, but it's not as simple as that, is it?
No, it's not as simple as that because, you know, all of Gaza is a danger zone. So if you tell Palestinians to leave their homes, there's not really a safe place for them to go. There are certain neighborhoods that are being bombarded more heavily than others, but nowhere is really safe. Almost everywhere has seen airstrikes. And, you know, the thing is that people in Gaza cannot leave Gaza. So there's really no safe place for them to go.
And the UN, a staggering number today, saying there are as many as 40,000 who have been displaced by this conflict now.
That's right. There's an incredible number of displaced people because of the ground invasion now that has caused so many more people to be displaced. Many of them are taking refuge in schools where there are multiple families crowded into classrooms. They're sleeping on thin mattresses. They say they don't have much to eat. It's a really difficult situation for them. And at the same time, we have electricity shortages and water shortages. So, you know, the situation is really difficult for these families.
And lastly, Kristen, if we look at this operation in terms of former IDF incursions into Gaza, can we get any idea of how long this could take?
Well, the last conflict was quite short, and it did not include a ground invasion. And the operation in 2009 did include a ground invasion. It lasted much longer, and it claimed many more lives. So if the ground invasion does expand significantly, as the Prime Minister said today that it might, then I think we can expect to see a longer and more deadly conflict.
Kristen Chick in Gaza for the Christian Science Monitor. And that's the Friday edition of FSN Reports. You can tell us what you think of the show by emailing us reports@featurestory.com and follow us on Twitter. We're there @featurestory. But for now, I'm Kevin McAleese in Washington alongside Simon Marks on the Bulletin Desk. For everyone with FSN everywhere, have a great weekend. Goodbye.